welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, July 26, 2018. And yes, it is Thursday, which means it's time for a little comic book therapy in a segment I like to call Therapy Thursday. Joining me this week on Therapy Thursday is going to be writer of 12 Devils Dancing from Action Lab Danger Zone. Of course, also doing Xena over at Dynamite in the upcoming Daredevil annual that I'm very excited about. Wait till you hear about it. Erica Schultz is joining me on the program today. Erica was an absolutely brilliant guest. She was hilarious, and I had a great time chatting with her. I hope you enjoyed the chat. We talked, of course, about San Diego Comic-Con, which she just got back from. We talked about her Action Lab book, writing Xena, even though she's never watched the show. How does that work? Listen and find out, because it's a brilliant answer. And, of course, our shared love of Moon Knight, among other things. Without further ado, here's Erica.
I'm getting over I'm in, like, the beginnings of con crud, so this is not my actual voice. I'm usually not this, like, deep. So.
You know, you say that, but I heard you talking to Daryl on Gotham by Geeks.
I sound like a 12-year-old on that.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Chris Campbell sounds like a 12-year-old. I don't know about you.
No, I think it was actually Chris Campbell's actual 12-year-old that was talking.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, I just needed a minute to finish up dinner. I don't know about you. Do you like cooking, by the way?
I do, but my husband likes cooking more, so I just let him.
Oh, see, I like that. That's like my wife hates cooking. Matter of fact, I don't even let her near a pot because she will burn the pot.
Ouch.
Yeah. So it works out because I love cooking, and I was just trying to wrap up so they could eat and I could do this. So thank you for coming on. How was San Diego?
Insane.
Yeah?
Yeah. Every year that I go through, it's like the five stages of grieving. Like, I go through the denial of, I can't believe it's this freaking crazy. And then the anger of, why is it this freaking crazy? And then the anxiety of, I'm never going to get another job from any editor ever again in my entire life. And then the realization that I probably won't ever get a job from any other editor ever in my entire life. And then lastly, the acceptance that, you know, screw it, I'll just go to nursing school.
I mean, you've got a backup, right? You did animation, so I think you'll be okay.
Well, that's the funny thing is that I actually was an art director in an ad agency before I did animation.
Oh, man.
So I had like a backup to my backup, and then I have a backup to my backup to my backup was I was an education major in college, so I could always go teach high school English.
That's what I figured I would do with my backup. So when I went to school to be an English major. My emphasis was on postmodern.
How's that working out for you?
It's fantastic. English major is the greatest career choice of all time because you'll never use it.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, you learn a lot of skills, though. You see what I mean? Like, even if you don't use your degree, I think there's certain skills that you get from being an English major that can help you out in whatever career you actually end up doing.
I concentrated in early British Romantic poetry.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so like William Blake, Keats, Coleridge, Wordsworth, you know, the really elitist jerks.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, the pre-modern alt-right. Not really. I'm just kidding. Don't quote me on that. Sorry, alt-writers. No, I don't know.
Excuse
those
me.
Guys.
Sorry.
Bless you.
That's con crud making its making its way, saying I'm not getting enough attention, so I'm going to make you cough.
Fair enough.
Don't worry. I have antibiotics.
I think you'll be okay. I mean, it's con crud. It's bound to happen.
I know, but San Diego is like the Olympic-level con crud.
I bet.
Like, if you're going to get – knock on wood, I haven't gotten con crud at all this year except for this. And I thought it was just allergies. And I kept saying to myself, it's just allergies. When you get home, you'll be fine. You're just not sleeping well. You're sleeping in a strange room. You know, JK kept the room at, like, you know, 20 degrees Fahrenheit the entire time. So there's, like, icicles growing off my toes. You'll be fine. Like, you have to go outside to warm up, to defrost. And then I got home and I was like, you know what? Pop a Benadryl and you'll be fine. You'll knock out. You'll wake up tomorrow morning. All the histamine will be gone. You'll be happy. And I woke up the next morning sounding like Keith David.
That's awesome. Now, see, what you got to do is you got to do every night the ritual. And what I do is I drink a little bit of gin and tonic after every day at a con, and I never get the con crud.
That would be wonderful, except for the fact that I've been sober for just over 9 years.
Well, congratulations. I guess that wouldn't work for you then.
No, and I, you know, even when I drank, I didn't drink gin, so I probably would have gone with a vodka martini.
There you go. There you go. It takes a very anal retentive, self-hating person to drink gin. I'll tell you that. Just saying.
Hey, you know, I know plenty of people that drink gin and tonics, but they're all like over 60. So
that's what my wife says.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, my wife tells me I should go drink with her grandma because her grandma likes gin and tonics as well.
My grandmother used to drink 7 and 7s.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes.
Nice.
She would drink 7 and 7s. And when I was a kid, I thought that that was like a card game. Like, I didn't know what it meant. But yeah, she would drink 7 and 7s and get really drunk. And then her brogue would come out more and more. And she would just be like the crazy Irish lady.
That is awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. My other grandmother from Italy drinks boxed wine, but, you know.
Well, that was going to be my story. So I come from an Italian family, and my my grandfather on my mother's side used to make wine at home. He had grapes in the backyard. I mean, he didn't have a huge yard, but he had enough to make wine once a year. And so I remember growing up and, like, picking the grapes with him, and, like, he would make me smash them in the barrel. Like, he was pretty old school. But, yeah, good times. Italian families, man, I'm telling you. A lot of fun.
A lot of fun, a lot of crazy.
Yeah, a lot of crazy. Same with Irish families.
Yes, yes, a lot of fun, crazy. I got the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. Win-win. So when you go to San Diego, is that different for you than other cons you attend to? Like, do you actually go there to work more, or do you set up your booth?
Well,
like, what is it that you
do? I don't table at San Diego. I know a lot of people that do, but I personally don't table at San Diego. So I don't have a table at Small Press or in Artist Alley. What I do is I go to basically talk to editors, make contacts, chat with people, and basically just sort of show off the latest thing that I'm doing. 12 Devils Dancing is the latest creator-owned book I'm working on. That the first issue is out now in stores from Action Lab. And, you know, people who hadn't, editors who hadn't seen it, you know, I had my little 8-inch Kindle out and, you know, showing them PDFs and things like that. And to, you know, also connect with artists and, you know, the internet is so big and with Twitter and everything. So to connect with people that I usually only talk to on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I'll, you know, meet up with them and hang out. And then there are a few people that I know that are, you know, a little on the famous side and they're, that are in California. So I get to hang out with them. And pretend to be cool for, you know, a couple hours.
Well, I mean, you know Tom King, right? He's the ultimate right now.
Yeah, I know Tom, although I'm not like BFF with Tom. Like, I've met Tom a few times and he's always been very kind and very gracious to me. Daryl's all like BFF tight with Tom. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm a little Tommy boy. I'm like, all right, fat guy in a little coat. I get it.
I make fun of Chris and Daryl all the time about that. That's pretty funny. No, that's cool. I figured that. And, you know, I was thinking about that over the weekend because, I don't know, it seemed like there was a lot of news, but not a lot of news at the same time. And I always thought to myself, like, would I ever want to go to San Diego? You know what I mean? It seems like it'd be too much. I wouldn't have as much fun. Like, the con I enjoy going to the most is C2E2, mostly because I have friends from all over the country that show up and we hang out. It's like a 3-day party, you know, and you get to hang out and talk to comic creators and whatever. But I feel like, especially in the industry, man, I don't know if I would want to go there. It seems like it's a little crazy, crazier than most.
Well, that's the thing is San Diego, there are a lot of people that don't do all four days. A lot of people actually do, you know, they only show up for like Friday and Saturday for meetings and things like that. Because it's such a haul, you know, going from the East Coast to the West Coast. I mean, if you're stationed in LA, it's two and a half hours. You can only come down for 2 days. Mm-hmm. That's not a big deal. But because, you know, I'm coming from the other side of the country, it kind of makes sense to do it for the whole 5 days.
Sure.
But, you know, every year I say I'm never coming back. And then, you know, February comes around and there I am buying my tickets. It's this weird codependency. Same thing, I think, also with New York Comic Con. There's like, I mean, I'm in New Jersey, so not doing New York Comic Con is kind of dumb because it is kind of a backyard show for me. But at the same time, it's like this necessary evil You know, I always feel like every time I don't do San Diego, I feel like I've missed out. What is it? FOMO? Is that FOMO. What it's called? You know, and it's the same thing. I've never done C2E2 and everyone says what a great show it is. And you know, and the same thing with, Emerald City is another one that everybody talks about. Such a great show. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'll just, you know, turn off Twitter for the weekend because I don't want to get depressed. You know, because then you think, oh, wait, well, you know, I missed out on X, Y, and Z. The other thing that was interesting about San Diego this year, though, is that there were several shows, like apparently HBO wasn't there. I don't know if Showtime was there, but there were several big players that are usually there that weren't presenting anything. And I think some people sort of thought that, oh, well, that's kind of a letdown. But.
Yeah, you're right. It might be some of that because I know like Marvel wasn't there really either, right, with the movie stuff. So it was more about what Warner Brothers was doing. And I don't know. I guess people are still down on the whole DC movie thing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, did you see the trailer for Titans?
Hell yeah.
Okay, is that a good hell yeah?
I saw all the trailers, including super obscure ones like Legacies from CW.
Okay. So what were your thoughts on the Titans trailer?
I thought it was fine. I didn't see what the uproar was about the whole F Batman thing and all that. I enjoyed the trailer. I think Raven looks amazing. Starfire looked a lot better in the trailer than in the pre-production pictures that they were showing. And I think overall it looked fine. It felt a little CW, but maybe a little more mature CW.
See, my issue with it is that Dick Grayson was never really that, you know, fuck Batman. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I say that?
Yeah, go ahead. I don't care.
Oh, no. I don't know. He was never that sort of F Batman kind of person. That was more Jason Todd.
Right.
And definitely Damian, because Damian's like a smart ass little son of a gun.
He's the best.
I hate Damian so much. I know murdering children is a bad thing, but man, I would take him out. So I kind of felt like that was a little too Jason Todd of Dick. The other thing was that the actor looks like he's 19 years old. How is he a detective at 19? Like, not, they needed an older actor, I think.
Well, let's be real, though. I mean, when Dick first showed up, he was, what, like 13?
No, when Dick first showed up, he was like 9.
Yeah, 9. Okay, there you go. Like, he was super small, and he's a detective. So I'm okay with the age thing. That doesn't bother me. I know what you mean about the Todd analogy. Maybe they're trying to combine a few different things, right? Because, like, my initial thought about was the Perez stuff, right? The Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. When Dick's like, okay, I'm done being Robin, you know, Batman's sidekick. I'm gonna carve out my own identity.
I'm reading Judas, so I get it.
Yeah. So, so I wonder, like, if that stuff was happening now, would Dick have said F Batman or something to that effect? And I think kind of the failing of the trailer in putting that in there is kind of, it felt more like, something to get a reaction out of people, right? Where some people would be like, oh my God, like, Dick Grayson saying F Batman, like, I've got to watch this now because it's going to be so edgy and so cool. And, you know, for us older folk, maybe that's not quite the case.
Are you referring to me as being old?
I'm probably older than you, so don't worry.
But what year, who was the president when you were born?
Oh God, I don't know. I was born in 81.
Okay, so the president was Reagan. The president when I was born was Carter, so I'm actually older
than
you.
Okay, so you're a little bit older than me.
I remember Gasline, son of a bitch. No. So basically, I see what you're saying and I get it. At the same time, I think that the failing of a lot of the DC films has been the hyper darkness and the broodiness. And I think that putting it into just changing the size of the screen from the films to the television isn't going to help the matter, I don't think. But I mean, I could be completely wrong. It could be the next giant blockbuster and all of our heads could explode full of confetti. So
sure. Well, and I wonder if that's not the reason why they're choosing to release everything at once. Because I mean, I tweeted out about this, I think yesterday, the day before, and some people were coming at me a little directly.
Comic fans coming at someone? Are you nuts?
Well, never that. I know it's so bad. I remember when I first started tweeting, it was like 10 years ago. I had like, you know, 3 followers. It was like my grandma and my girlfriend and my dad, you know what I mean? And now that I have a lot of people following me, I just get these people commenting on stuff. And sometimes you're like, ugh. And I can only imagine, right? Like somebody that's like, Tom King, for example, getting death threats, which is ridiculous. But can you imagine, like, having that many people following you, that many people, like, reading your book, and you have to deal with all these a-holes? Like,
I can strive only imagine. To the level of getting death threats. No, I'm just kidding. I don't. I don't.
But,
I mean, I think what it does is, when people do something like that, all that does is pull the misanthrope out of me. All that does is really make me want to say, like, F all y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the most ludicrous, ridiculous thing in the history of the world. Like, I remember Saturday Night Live did a skit 30, 40 years ago about Star Trek fans. And it was with Shatner, and how the fans seemed to know more about him than he did. And it was kind of a creepy thing. And this was 35 years ago. Now, it's with the internet, you're not going to creation cons and, you know, sitting in a room and, you know, getting your mic to ask your question. No, now it's instant access to anyone at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel that because they have a microphone in front of them, i.e. their keyboard or their phone, they can just say whatever the hell comes to mind. And I feel like we have completely lost all sense of decorum, you know, all sense of decency of how to treat people. And it's ridiculous. When people come up to me at a convention and they say to me, hey, I know you from Twitter, I tense up. And I don't – no, and I'll tell you why. For two reasons. One, because it could be, hey, I know you from Twitter. You're the person who always posts cat photos and stupid stuff and makes me laugh. Or it could be, hey, I know you from Twitter. I hate you, and I'm going to, like, burn your table to the ground or something.
Right, right. Yeah, but don't you think – I mean, I totally agree. I think we're all a little too overexposed. But, I mean, ultimately, if people still had some kind of common sense would dictate you don't say those kind of things to other people, right? You respect somebody else's space. You respect somebody else's opinion. You have some kind of common discourse, right? Like – you and I can have very different opinions on whatever – let's say just say politics. I hate to use politics, but we'll just go with that.
Sure.
We can have different opinions of politics, but I mean I can find some way to understand how you came up with the opinion that you have, whereas a lot of these people don't feel that way. They're like, it's either the way that I think and my friends think, or that's it, right? There's no other way.
You're either with us or against us, and it's very Sith.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, tribalism's always been a thing, right? But I think especially now we're really getting back to that. It's pretty sad.
Mm. At this point, I'm just sort of like, you know, I sort of shrug a lot of it off. At the same time, I'm in a privileged position that I do have a sense of – somewhat of a sense of anonymity. But there are other people that don't have that, and which is probably another reason why I don't start very many fires.
Yeah.
You know, there are some, and by no means, no one deserves the abuse that gets slung online, Twitter especially. At the same time, the second someone starts, you know, slinging mud, it's, look, I'm not going to deal with this. You're obviously not going to listen. So peace out, man. Mute or block kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do know people that engage, and I sort of go with that old adage, ignore the bully.
Yeah.
And you know, hey, there are people that will engage, and that's fine. That's their deal. At the same time, my way of handling it is to sort of take a step back and be like, all right, cooler heads prevail kind of thing.
Yeah, I had my first serious interaction of that kind, I don't know, a few weeks ago. I don't know what it is what we're talking about. It was something DC. I can't remember. And Rich Johnston from Bleeding Cool replied to my comment. And, I mean, you know, Rich is kind of a divisive person, right? Like, I'm not a fan of Bleeding Cool, but I love Rich. He's, in terms of, like, a person that knows and loves comics, he's, like, second to none, right? Like, he knows his stuff, and you can feel it. But we started talking about something, and somebody that typically trolls him kind of got involved in the discussion, and he just kept talking, and it wasn't even about the stuff that Rich and I were talking about. It was something completely unrelated. I guess Rich had posted something on his website, and the guy disagreed and wanted to chime in on that, on this conversation. And it just didn't make sense, right? But we just kind of ignored him, and eventually he ended up going away when he realized, hey, we're not going to reply to your stuff. right? Like, at first we tried, but once you see that somebody just is not able to open up their mind to a particular point of view, they just kind of leave it alone.
Yeah.
And, like, some guys like Patch Searcher, I can't believe the amount of time he spends actually dealing with these people. And I don't know if, like, maybe he finds it fun in some way. I don't think that's the case.
I told Patch, thank you for doing all that, because now you're already starting a list for me of the people that I need to mute. You're doing me a service, Patch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, once...
He did the cover for the re-release of M3 in a year ago. He did the cover of the first volume.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, Patch is awesome, man. There's very few people that, when they start talking, like, really political, I'll continue to follow, or at least not mute him. Patch is probably the only one that I still actually enjoy reading his tweets, because he's extremely insightful. So, anyways.
He is. He definitely is.
He is. Should we talk about happier things, like your book about a serial killer? That's happier
stuff. Sure! That is much happier stuff. Yeah, 12 Devils Dancing, it came out on the 18th from Action Lab. The second volume comes out on the 22nd next month. It is about a serial killer who is stalking a retired FBI agent.
Yeah. Where did the idea for this come from? Because I'm going to tell you, I loved it. And I know there was some kind of publishing thing, because I got it on Comixology the week before. And then when I went to tell people, hey, you should go check out this book and buy it, you can no longer get it in Comixology until the 18th.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, honestly. There was some sort of snafu, and, you know, I emailed the publisher, and they said this stuff happened, so, you know, you just sort of move on.
Okay, fair enough.
The book came out on the 18th, which was great. We had a San Diego exclusive cover done by J.K. Woodward.
Nice.
At the Action Lab Danger Zone booth. So that was great.
By the way, J.K., super talented guy.
Absolutely. Very talented guy. Very sweet guy. He ended up needing a hotel room, so he was my roommate for the week.
Nice.
At San Diego. So where did this idea come from? I actually thought of this as an ongoing series, and it was going to be a television series that I was going to look to promote. And, you know, obviously things like funding and things like that are very difficult to get for television series. Mm-hmm. So I figured, you know what I could do was I could boil down the television series, which was kind of like, almost like a supernatural kind of thing, you know, going from place to place, these two characters, Callum and Aisha, going from place to place, solving crimes while they're there, but then also picking up another clue and another clue and another clue leading to the big bad. And that was kind of the original idea. And I figured I could get like a good two seasons out of that. But unfortunately, like I said, you know, things sort of fall apart that way. And so I said, I'll just take it to its most raw, purest form, like take out all the subplots and all this other stuff and just make it its raw, purest form. And do it in, you know, between 6 and 8 issues. And that's what I did. And Dave Acosta came along for the ride, and Andrew Kovalt came along for the ride, and Cardinal Ray came along for the ride. And we had great covers. Kelly Williams and Adriana Mello and Maria Sanapo, Michael Montanant, Natasha Altarici, and Kevin Maher, who's actually the logo designer as well, a friend of mine from college. We got a whole bunch of people put stuff together, and it was great. And the trade is actually the cover for the trade. I'm hoping to be able to release it soon. It was done by Bill Sienkiewicz. So
nice.
It was
very,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Bill actually did a cover for M3 number 2 all the way back in 2010. So Bill and I go back a ways.
Nice. Yeah. So you did the smart thing is you wrote a comic book so you can get optioned and make it big like everybody else.
Fingers crossed.
That's a new thing, right?
I guess that's the thing.
No, that's awesome, though. I really dug it. There's I'm a huge horror fan. I have this weird fascination with, like, cults and stuff. So this played totally up my alley. And there was a nice little twist. I always try to, especially a book like this, right? I think at its core, there's various elements of different genres. But at its core, it's obviously a kind of a detective story. And those are my favorite kind of stories because, you know, I think when the writer really knows what they want to do with the work, you have like little clues here and there, right? Even before you have the big reveals. Like you had a pretty big twist in this book, when you find out who the killer is.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that because I caught some of that, but then once I saw it, I went back and reread some of the earlier part of the story and got the hints, and it made total sense that that's who the arch nemesis would be.
Well, the idea, I mean, I like to deal with duality a lot. If you've picked up Xena, which came out the week before on the 11th, there's a whole thing with duality in my story arc for Xena. Basically, it comes down to this idea of two people grow up in the same environment. One goes right, one goes left. You know, what is the, in writing's terms, they would say the inciting incident. What is the inciting incident that makes one person go one way and another person go another way? Mm-hmm. You know, you read about serial killers and stuff, and they're not all only children.
Right.
So if somebody's a serial killer, then what about their brother or their sister or their, you know, cousin or whatever, you know, what is it that made them go the direction that they went when their siblings didn't?
Mm-hmm.
You know, presumably that they grew up in the same environment. So I think that's kind of an interesting take. And the fact that even our hero is very, very, very flawed.
Yeah, he's very pro. Yeah.
You know, he's got his own issues. And he can be incredibly selfish. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I make very quick references to his time in the service, in the Army,
mm-hmm.
when I was looking at it as a television series. I had expanded this, you know, gave him this whole backstory about going to the Army. And, I mean, it's not a spoiler that our main character, Callum Cooper, happens to be gay.
Right.
But this idea of, you know, he was in the Army, he had an affair with a colonel and ended up getting discharged because this was pre don't ask, don't tell. You know, so, you know, he wasn't disgraced in the Army, but it was one of those things where, like, just discharge him and, you know, tell, you know, pay him a little hush money.
Sure.
And, you know, sort of leave it that way. So instead of, you know, standing up for himself, you know, being proud or anything like that, he just sort of took it and ran. You know, which you could look at and say, that's really not a very heroic thing to do. So, I mean, there's that he has this sort of ends justifies the means kind of thing that he can't, even if he wants to, he can't get over it.
So I feel, all right, I'm going to give a spoiler warning because I feel like there's questions that I have that may spoil the story. So I'm just going to continue. If you haven't read it, you should pick it up. The book's fantastic. All right.
Please do.
With that said, by the way, I know you made a comment when you were chatting with Daryl and Gotham by Geeks about Comixology. I'm assuming you prefer people pick up the book physically, not digitally, correct?
Oh, because I made the comment about, you know, yeah, not getting.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Comixology, when it was purchased by Amazon, one of the changes that they made, I think it was 2014, 2015, one of the changes that they made when it was purchased by Amazon was that the in-app purchases was then disabled.
Right.
The only way that you can purchase in-app is when you have a Kindle. And you have the Comixology app on the Kindle. That's mm-hmm. the only time you can do it. But you can't do it through an iPhone. You can't do it through an Android phone. None of that. And comics can be kind of an impulse buy. And so if you're at a convention and you're talking to somebody and they say, oh, I'd like to check out your book, but I only go digital. You could say, oh, well, why don't you just pull up the app on your phone?
Mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, engage them that way. Whereas when they removed that option, that feature, that took that away. And it put more pressure on, I would say, I feel it would put more pressure on the creators to push digital more in order to get the same type of returns as when the in-app purchase was available. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I got you. That makes sense. I think that may be part of the reason why a lot of people still love going to a comic shop is kind of the community aspect, and I think that's something you don't have digitally, right? Like,
not at all.
You can't go to the Comixology site and like see what people are saying about a book or whatever. Like, if you have that word of mouth, it's because your friend read the book and told you about it, or you listen to a podcast and you're like, okay, I'm going to go check it out. Whereas if you go to a comic shop, you have people physically there talking about it. Hey, like, you want to try this book out? You want to try that book out? Like, you know, things like that. Or like, you know, I know you love horror books. Here's, you know, whatever, 12 Devils Dancing or Bone Parish. It's in your box if you want it. If not, you know. Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder if there's a way they could do it where you can start that conversation.
It seems like
it'd be pretty tough digitally. Okay, anyways, I was just curious because I heard your comment. I was like, huh,
yeah,
I wonder
and
if there's something
funny,
in there.
Now, because watch, now I'm going to get an email from Comixology saying they're dropping all my books.
No, they won't do that.
Yeah,
they won't
from
do that.
Your lips to God's ears.
No, they won't do that because then you can just go to the shop. I mean, it's stupid. Just have it on there. Comixology, don't do it. All right. So back to this duality thing. It's really interesting, right? So every time you hear about like a serial killer that got caught and they interview like the neighbors or like mm-hmm. the wife or the aunt or whatever, like, oh, it like Johnny was such
quiet.
A nice boy. He was so quiet. Mm-hmm. He would stay in the house all day and mow his lawn and go grocery shopping. He would help.
Mow his lawn in the house? That's weird.
Well, like not, it, well, I mean, if he's a little psychotic, maybe he does.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got hallucinations. But, you know, like he helped the little next door, like go get groceries, whatever, like super nice guy. And, you know, having done a lot of reading about serial killers, obviously, like, that's exactly what a serial killer would want you to think, right? They don't want you to think that they're a serial killer, right? How are they going to continue with their habits if they wear that on their sleeves, right? So they pretty much become kind of an upstanding person. And I thought about that a little bit with your main character. Was it Coop, right?
Yeah, Callum Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper. So, you know, he grows up in this odd environment, and I hope you dive into that whole thing a little bit more as the series progresses, because I find that whole thing fascinating as well. But he grows up in this really strict environment, obviously verbally abused. You don't show it, but allegedly very much physically abused and probably sexually abused. And yet he grows up, he goes to the army, he goes and becomes an FBI agent, whereas his friend does not.
Friend in air quotes.
Yes, friend in air quotes. I mean, we only see like the one interaction, I think, between the two. So.
Oh, you see more, don't worry.
Oh, I hope so. But the first reveal, you only have that one little mm-hmm. scene. And I find that so interesting, right? Like, that's kind of his way of dealing with the trauma, right? Like, you try to be what, in quotes, your parental figure, your parent, was not, right? And I think that's something that people can kind of latch onto anyway, right? Like, if my parents were really strict on me, especially my dad was very strict with me when I was growing up. I didn't get beat or anything like that, but he was extremely strict. And as I grew up, you know, things got a little laxer, right? Because I guess they feel like you're coming into your own. But one thing that I always said to myself is, you know, when I have kids, I don't really agree with the way that this was done. I'm going to do it this way, right? Whereas with Coop and with the crypto killer, it's kind of an extreme version of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think everything in this book is to the extreme. You know, the emotions are to the extreme. The situation with Aisha in college went to the extreme. You know, the fact that there's a murderer on the loose goes to the extreme. The lengths at which this murderer kills people and the methods that he does are extreme. This book takes you, you know, one of the things that I was worried about is there's a lot of graphic portrayals in this. Which is why when Action Lab picked up the book, they said that, you know, that whole warning label on the front of the book isn't a joke. Like some people actually make it a joke, but this, I said, I don't want to. I mean, I want people to know that there will be nudity, there will be violence, there will be cursing, there will be all these things. This is an extreme situation, and I don't want people to think that it's just going to be a walk in the park. Mm-hmm. A friend of a friend actually, sorry, the cat's jingling his bell, which means he needs to go eat, go get dinner. A friend of a friend who actually loves horror. I had him look at it and I said, is this too much? And he said, no. He said, I think that this is fine. You know, for somebody who loves, you know, body horror, he was fine with all of it. And I said, all right, 'cause I know horror fans can be, you know, can sort of be very protective of their genre.
Sure.
I didn't want them to think that I'm sort of like wading into a pool that I don't belong in. So.
No, that makes sense. And really it depends on like how you define horror too, right? So like I think for a lot of people, my wife, for example, loves horror as well, but she likes very different things than I do. So she loves like the Saw movies and, what is it? Like Hostel, like those kind of things. And, mm-hmm. and to me, like, yes, it's horror, but I prefer like the original Alien movie, for example. To me, that's a horror movie, right? Where you have like this supernatural thing in the background and the story is about how the people react to the situation and not mm-hmm. so much about what the situation is.
Yeah.
Whereas in more modern horror movies, it's more like, hey, let's just chop this guy's head off and throw it over there and have this guy eat the whatever, the pinky finger. I don't know, whatever, some crazy stuff. But
no, I think it's a stylistic choice. I mean, you look at something like Suspiria. Mm. You know, like you were talking about more classic horror. You look at like Suspiria, it's something, you know, that's mostly, or even like Jaws, you know, the idea of like you don't see the bad guy for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I like that kind of thing. And you do kind of have a period. I think, I'm assuming there was some kind of conscious choice, either by Action Lab or yourself, to make this an extra length story, right? Because you have 3 issues in one with this first issue.
Yes. That was an Action Lab choice because they're sort of experimenting with stuff, and so they decided that they were going to do a basically like a triple issue, mm-hmm. and so that's what they put together. So it's going to be 2 issues, but each issue is going to be like a triple issue.
Yeah, no, I like that. I talked to Bridget Connell, who has a book over at Titan, Brother Nash. And it's kind of a supernatural horror book as well. And they did the same thing with her book. And for some reason, I think I prefer that, at least for a first issue, because I think you can get more invested into the world when you're putting multiple issues into one. Because you know, normally, like, you have to wait 2-3 months to really, like, get to know what's happening, right? Like, I'm a firm believer in whenever I try a new book, I always try to give a book a new arc, an entire arc. And generally that is 4 issues, I guess, for the majority of publishers. And, you know, once you have a book like this, and I think, you know, a detective story like this really benefits from having the additional material in the first issue. And then after that, like, you can do whatever, right? Go back to the 22 pages. I'm okay with that. But I like the choice. I like the choice.
There was a review that was done that actually made a good point. They said, you know, like in this sort of like everything's binged kind of world, mm-hmm. Having 3 issues in one, you know, 64 pages of actual content, sort of ties in with that sort of culture.
Yeah. Well, you know, like TV used to be this way too, right? So the premiere episode would be like a 2-hour premiere, mm-hmm. and then you go back to whatever the format is, 30 minutes, an hour. And then your finale is a 2-hour finale, right? Like, it's that kind of thing. And I like it. It's cinematic, right? And that fits with, I mean, you wanted this to be a show, right? So, makes sense to me. I don't know.
If it makes sense to you, man, then that's, you know, half my work is done.
I trust the people at Action Lab. I've recently gotten into Action Lab quite a bit, actually. I can't remember what books that I picked up. And I don't shop by publisher. I don't care who puts out a book. If it looks interesting, I'll buy it. And, like, I start reading my pull list, and I'm like, oh, this is really good. Like, who makes it? Oh, Action Lab. Okay. Well, maybe I should check out and see what else is going on, right? And the next month is, like, a different book. I'm like, oh, who makes this? Action Lab. Okay. So now Action Lab's always on my things to check out list because they really do interesting stuff. And I like that, right? Because you can do stuff at Marvel and DC, and they'll try new things, but it's a big corporate culture, and there's things that they can't do. Right, so I always try to see what the smaller guys are doing because I think that's where a lot of the really interesting storytelling comes out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a book like yours, you could never do that. Maybe even Vertigo, maybe, but I think it might even be a little much for Vertigo.
I don't know. I mean, Vertigo has had some pretty intense things.
Yeah,
wasn't American Vampire from Vertigo?
You're right.
I mean, it's. I think Vertigo's. Some people will say, "Well, Image is the only place for anything," kind of thing. And I don't believe that. I think there's a place at pretty much any publisher, unless you're a kids publisher, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that. So what is this? Is this six issues?
It's six issues, so it's technically two issues.
Gotcha.
It's six chapters, I'll say.
Gotcha. Okay. See, I like this. This is good to know. I didn't even think about it. When you said the six issues, I was like, wait, so is that including the three that's one? Okay.
And that would be 18. Oh, my God.
You wouldn't want to do 18 issues of this?
I would love to. I just, you know, one of the great things about Action Lab is that they take chances. But they're a smaller publisher, so they're not footing the bill for the art.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
So yeah, I mean, I'd love to take this 18 issues, but I'd also like to be able to make my mortgage.
No, that's a good point. All right, so you got this, and then I had a question about Xena.
What about it?
So I have not yet read your Xena book.
Okay.
But I did purchase it because I was very curious. Now, I grew up watching Xena. From my understanding, you have never watched Xena before.
Nope.
So I want to briefly get into this discussion because I think it's important. I'm fascinated with how people think, in particular writers. I was talking to Cullen Bunn last week quite a bit because he's a big horror guy, but you know, he can't do horror in, like, his Marvel books, for example. So he throws, like, little elements in, right, to appease himself, I guess. But I want to go into your process. Let me ask you, Erica, how is it possible that you could write a character that you know nothing about, okay? It's like when they ask, how can Bendis write Jessica Jones? He's a guy and she's a woman. It's impossible. Can't do it.
It's called research.
But that's what I want to know. Like, what kind of research did you do in order to figure out what story you wanted to tell with this book?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think any story can be told with any character. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. So I could tell this story with Red Sonja. I could tell this story with Moon Knight. I could tell this story with Captain America. And it's the details that are what make it a Xena story. The fact that it's set in ancient Greece, the fact that there's oracles and magic and mysticism and things like that. But the story, the base story, this idea of duality, this idea of accepting who you are, is a story that can go, you can do that with any character on any platform, on any planet. Like, you could do this, this could be a Martian Manhunter story, mm-hmm. You know, so that's the first thing. So if you have a storyline, just when I say the story, I don't mean, like I said, the details. Like, obviously, you're not going to do Martian Manhunter story in ancient Greece, although that would actually be kind of
cool. Yeah.
So the idea is that you, first of all, Meredith Finch who's a fantastic writer and I adore her, good friend. She was a huge Xena fan. So when she started writing it, and then I was brought in before I was announced as the new writer, she sent me all the scripts and I read through the scripts and everything. And she, being a huge Xena fan, obviously already gave me a primer.
Gotcha.
That's the first thing. Second thing is that I looked up for the factual stuff. So, you know, Xena's got a million and one Wikipedia pages, you know, not just for the characters, but the fan pages and this and the next thing. So I read all of those. I read up about the what characters have been used, what characters haven't been used. There's a character that I bring in that actually is only spoken about in the Xena lore, but is never actually shown.
Nice.
So we actually see this character, quote, on screen. Which is really cool. And Vicente Cifuentes, who did Meredith's arc and who's also working on my arc, is just phenomenal. He's amazing. He does terrific character designs. I mean, obviously, Xena and Gabriel have specific look to them. That's set in stone. But the other characters that are around, these new characters that we're bringing in, he he gives them such a beautiful life. The Xena story that I'm writing starts out. Xena and Gabriel actually don't show up until page 6. So the entire opening of the story focuses on this young girl, this young woman who is a seer. She has these visions of other people, of things happening, and she doesn't know if they're hallucinations or if they're premonitions or whatever. But it, you know, she has these almost like exorcist-like seizures, and it's happened over and over and over again, and it seems to have gotten worse since her sister died. And her parents are terrified. And she almost has a rogue ability where if when she's having one of these fits, if you touch her, she'll then sort of look into your soul. And so, I mean, it's really terrifying for these parents. Not only have they lost one daughter, but then this other daughter they're assuming is essentially going insane. And they don't accept that she's an actual seer. They don't accept that she has these abilities. They just think that she's damaged, she's crazy, she's been marked by furies, she's been cursed, you know, all these other things. So if you think of it that way, it's kind of almost like an X-Men story.
Nice.
And then, you know, we bring in the duality. When I was reading up on the Oracle historically, the Oracle at Delphi, would pray to the Temple of Apollo. Now, Apollo was a twin. Apollo and Artemis. Apollo was the god of the sun, Artemis the goddess of the moon, and they were twins. Mm-hmm. So this idea of duality, of the sun rising, the moon rising, and you know, us having different sides. Like Xena has different sides. She had the warlord side and then the redemptive side. And, you know, sometimes you see Gabrielle, even though she's, you know, sort of the plucky sidekick, there are times that you see her with a dark side as well. So sort of playing with this idea of duality. And like I said, I mean, that is an idea that can go in any story, any character. And so that's why it's, yes, I didn't watch the TV show. I'm sorry, fans. I'm a horrible human being. But if you read the book, what everybody's saying is, this is a great Xena story, and that's all I want, is I just want to bring a good Xena story to the table, and if people like it, then great. Then I don't think it matters that I never watched the show.
See, Erica, you're a professional.
Why is that?
That's a great answer.
Well, I mean, okay, I watched Charmed. I loved the show Charmed, and I watched it, and when Dynamite asked me to write the book, I was like, yeah, this is great. Boom. I've got this down. And one of the things that people couldn't criticize me on the voices of the characters, because I had those down, because I had them in my head, you know, before I even refreshed my sort of Charmed lexicon on Netflix. So what they turned around and started saying was, well, you know, if this is supposed to be season 4, then it's technically, you know, 2001 or 2002. And so-and-so shouldn't have a laptop that looks like that, or so-and-so shouldn't have a smartphone. And, you know, usually I ignore that kind of criticism because to me, that's just nitpick.
Yeah, that's silly.
You know, the girls, if you watch the show, the girls had cell phones. Yeah, they had brick phones, but they still had cell phones. They still had that ability to communicate outside of the home. Mm-hmm. And that was all that I was looking to do. And so one person got a little snippety. And so I said, look, I'm going to explain something to you. You will reconcile the ideas of magic, of sisters having magic, of multiple generations of magic, of demons, of people literally walking through walls, possessing people's souls, removing souls from the physical body. You will reconcile all of that, but you're going to give us garbage on a laptop or a smartphone? Come on. Yeah,
that's always the best argument, right? I mean, these are fictional characters. Unless you're Grant Morrison, then they're all real. But these are fictional characters, right? So you need to give a little leeway.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, Don't focus so much on the detail. Like I was saying, the story. Focus on the story. What's the moral of the story? So with Xena, it's this woman, this young woman named Nazar, and her quest to sort of find herself, to accept herself because her whole life she's being told by her parents that there's something wrong with you. And then the other daughter, the older daughter, who was like the perfect daughter, passes away. And now it's like, oh, well, not only do we lose our perfect daughter, but now we're left with this damaged one. You know, so this idea of accepting yourself for who you are, that's Nazar's journey. That can be any story. You know, when, you know, we were talking earlier about Dick Grayson. You know, Dick Grayson realizing that he's Nightwing versus Robin. Mm-hmm. You know, the accepting yourself. That's any journey. You know, the idea, the back and forth of what your parents want versus for your life versus what you want for your life. That's a universal thing. Everybody, whether you know your parents or not, everyone has them, unless you were born out of an egg. And even then, you probably had parents. So like, that's kind of the thing. So what really frustrates me sometimes is when people get very, very nitpicky. Because I feel as if they're not seeing the forest through the trees. They're just looking for something to pick at, as opposed to looking at the story as a whole.
And just enjoying the story, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, you know, we were talking about being English majors, you know, each one of these issues is almost like a stanza in and of itself. Mm-hmm. A stanza of a poem. And in its own right, it has what it's saying, but it's part of something bigger and something more whole. So, yes, whereas when you're writing periodicals, you have to make sure that each and every issue sells, and each and every issue has a hook, and each and every issue has, you know, a cliffhanger, and this, that, and the next thing. And from a storytelling standpoint, and also from a financial standpoint, obviously, I completely understand that. At the same time, don't pick something from, you know, don't pick issue 12 out of an 18 issue arc and then start picking apart that the laptops are too new. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, totally. Totally.
Totally.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it's hard for some people to differentiate, you know, people become so invested in characters and in franchises, right? So they feel like they have partial ownership of that. And I think that's part of the problem, right?
Well, then they don't understand how copyright law works. No, I'm being completely honest.
Sure.
If you want to claim ownership to a character, write fan fiction. People have been doing it for decades, and probably longer than decades. But if you want to claim ownership to that, either wait until it falls into the public domain, or write fan fiction on your Tumblr, and let that be your release. Let that be your your outlet for your frustration, because Tom King or Shea Fontana or, you know, G. Willow Wilson or, you know, whomever isn't telling the story that you want to tell. Okay, tell that story. Tell it in your fan fiction.
Yeah. You're the best. All right. I have one final question for you.
Yeah. There are two things that I'm a very honest person, and that's a good thing and a bad thing. Again, duality. The good thing of it is that I'm going to tell somebody the truth. The bad thing about it is I don't sugarcoat things very often. And because of that, I tend to come off as a jerk. And there are plenty of people that are just like, she's a sanctimonious jerk. Okay, I'm a sanctimonious jerk. But what I said was there anything false in what I said? No.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, like, if you feel that you own Spider-Man, if you feel that you own Wolverine, Batman, Dick Grayson, whomever, you obviously do not understand how copyright law works.
See? Erica Schultz, I'm telling you, you're the best. You're my favorite guest so far. Don't tell the other ones. My final question for you.
You actually think somebody's going to listen to this podcast. They're going to see my name in the metadata and be like, screw it, on to the next.
That's okay. Daryl will download it 3,000 times.
Excuse me.
All right. Loaded question.
Uh-oh.
Kind of a trick question. Who is your favorite comic book character, and why is it Moon Knight?
You just answered the question.
Exactly. See, I'm glad we agree. Thanks, Erica.
Okay. No. Well, okay. Moon Knight is in my top five. He's not the absolute favorite comic book character.
All right. Give me your top five. Let's do that.
My top five. Okay. Are we doing just Marvel, just DC?
Nope. Any character, any publisher, whatever you want. Any time period, doesn't matter.
Okay. My top five would be Silver Age Hawkgirl, Shire Hall.
Wow, okay.
Space Cops, basically.
Yeah.
Rogue, preferably post Avengers, King Size Avengers 10, you know, yeah. after her first appearance, more along the lines when she changed.
Sure.
Although she's gone back and forth. She's flipped coins too many times.
Yeah, I'm curious to read the new book that Kelly's doing, Mr. and Mrs. X.
Yeah, I have to pick that up. Okay, so her, Gambit, of course, Remy LeBeau.
No! Okay, continue.
Not the death version of him. I'm literally looking at art on my walls right now. To be like, who have you spent money on? That... Moon Knight, yes, is part of it. Moon Knight is in there. And I have a love for Beast. I really do.
Nice. You're all about some X-Men in there.
I do. I do like a lot of X-Men. But if you think about it, Moon Knight in himself is five characters, so.
True. So if Marvel approached you.
This is such a loaded question. I honestly, legally, I don't even know if I can answer this, but go on.
Dang it. If Marvel approached you and said, hey, Erica, we want you to write, a new X title.
A new X title. Okay.
A new X title. Here, we'll do that. Okay. That way it's not too loaded. We want you to write a new X title. Who would you put on your book and give me a one line synopsis of what the book's about?
Oh God. Well, I'd love to have like a blue furry beast, not the, you know, throwback Beast who's now studying with Doctor Strange and stuff.
Yeah, don't like
that. I would do like pure science, blue furry. I'd love to throw him. I don't know if he's still dating Abigail Brand. Is he?
I don't think so.
Okay. But I would love to throw him on like a cosmic journey with like Beta Ray Bill.
Holy shit. Are you serious?
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Beta Ray Bill, the most underrated Thor of all time.
He's like my number six.
He's the best. He's so good.
He's like my number six. Jon Stewart is probably my number seven. Zatanna's probably eight. I like Bluebird. I like Cheshire. So I would love to put them because Beast would have this. It would be like this cosmic awakening for him because as a scientist, he's always wanting to know more. I would love Beta Ray Bill to like take him on a cosmic adventure.
You need to pitch this story.
Like a buddy. It would be like a buddy, like a buddy comedy, but like with lots of fighting.
Yeah. You need to pitch the story. By the way, you played right into a joke that I make all the time.
About Beta Ray Bill?
No, about Marvel Comics. This is not going to hurt you in any way, so don't worry. But
you say that now. I'm going to get my Daredevil editor is going to be emailing me and be like, what is it that you said on this podcast?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because even though it's a joke, I love it. The new thing at Marvel is something in space, right? So that's kind of become one of the jokes that I use all the time. When they announced Doctor Strange, they're going to be redoing that book. And they're like, yeah, Doctor Strange in space. And you got like Black Panther. He's in space. You've got
it's like the end of when you're reading your fortune cookie in bed.
Exactly. You get it. I like this idea, though. Beast and Beta Ray Bill in space. Huh. All right. I'm going to run something by you. I had this idea a long time ago.
Not going to make your comic book.
Feel free to run with this. Moon Knight and Apocalypse in ancient Egypt with the time-traveling Hawkeye that showed up in, what was it, Fist of Khonshu? With the time-traveling Hawkeye. Think about it, okay? You don't need to write it. Just think about it.
I would, you know what? I wouldn't do the time-traveling Hawkeye. I would do Bishop.
I like that. I was just trying to throw it in there because, you know, Hawkeye had a little thing with Moon Knight. But I like Bishop. Makes sense. You're an ex-person. I get it. Why not time-traveling Jamie Maddox, the Multiple Man?
You know, I liked him better when he lived on a farm with Lila Cheney.
Oh, you know, like, man.
That was the last that I knew of Jamie until this, until like a miniseries just came out. But that was the last I knew of him. He was literally living on a farm with Lila Cheney doing the whole American Gothic thing.
Mm-hmm. He's the best. You missed the IVX. That was great. Inhumans X-Men. Everyone hates it. I love it. I love things people hate. That's
I liked the Avengers versus the X-Men. I liked that one.
That was pretty good.
There was a great Beast and Simon Williams one where Beast and Wonder Man sort of reminisce about the past as, like, West Coast Avengers.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It might have been A plus X, because remember they did, like, AVX and then they did A plus X? It might be A plus X, but...
I don't remember A plus X. I remember AVX for sure. Maybe I missed that one. God, Wonder Woman was the best. What was it? It was like a...
You say Wonder Woman?
Wonder Man, sorry. Well, Wonder Woman is also the best.
Wonder Woman is also pretty awesome. Well, Simon Williams, yeah.
It reminded me, there was a comic that I read, I want to say it was West Coast Avengers, where Wonder Man goes to the late night show with David Letterman. Did you ever read this comic? Now I gotta find it. It is amazing. And, like, David Letterman wears a costume and saves the Avengers from getting killed.
Oh my god.
It is the best. It's from, like, the late 70s, maybe? Mid 70s? I don't know. I'll have to look it up. Letterman's on the cover. You can't miss it. His giant freaking mouth. But, yeah.
His giant freaking mouth.
His giant freaking mouth. Now he's got that giant freaking beard. He's awesome. He's awesome.
He's got that show on Netflix now.
He does. All right, Erica, I'm going to let you go. It's been a pleasure. Why don't you let people know where they can find your wonderful work?
Okay, well, Xena number 6 is in stores right now. Xena number 7 is out August 8th. 12 Devils number 1 is in stores now. 12 Devils number 2 is in stores August 22nd. And the Daredevil annual that I wrote, starring Misty Knight, is in stores August 29th.
Oh, Misty, really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. The new, like, twisted Misty?
No, like, we're going, like, Misty Knight and Daredevil French Connection.
Holy moly. All right.
So think gritty 70s, pre-bionic arm. You know, Misty was on the side of Tony Stark during Civil War. She was not, she was pro-Reg. She was not up for masks. So that's sort of like, I'm a good cop. I don't need any of this craziness to be a good cop.
That's awesome. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. She showed up. What did I just read her in? Oh, the new Jessica Jones book that Kelly's mm-hmm. doing. God, she was so badass in that. All right. Anyways. I love that book. I think Jessica Jones might be my favorite Marvel book. Don't tell anybody else.
I won't tell anybody.
It's really good. It used to be Black Bolt. All right. Anyways.
You know, nobody's going to actually listen to this.
I know. So. We have, like, my mom listens. Okay. And that's about it.
It's like all the comics people will be like, I'm a really good artist. My mom has all my art on the fridge.
Yes. My parents own all my comics. I wrote them in a little post-it note when I was
exactly.
five. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, thanks a lot, Erica. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, man.
I want to thank Erica again for joining me on the program. It was a pleasure chatting with her. And I hope you check out the book, 12 Devils Dancing from Action Lab. It's 2 issues. Each issue is 3 issues in itself. So it's a 5.99 book, but you're getting like 70 pages. And I thought it was a really brilliant book. If you want to get in touch with me, Twitter is, of course, the best place. At GeekFinance, where you can find me. You can email nerdylegion@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. I'll be back with a brand new episode tomorrow. We'll catch you then.